A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brialso Lake puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care-to-be-great.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone Sports Network, powered by KSL Sports. Alex Keery, former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell across from me. And I just don't know one person who really could give me an argument as to why Rudy and Donovan should be on the All-NBA first, second, or third team. Especially when you see the list. LeBron's on the third team. LeBron led the league in scoring. LeBron James, probably the second best player in the history of the game, is on the All-NBA third team after leading the league in scoring, right? That scoring title. And he's the All-NBA third team. Where's their room? I'll tell you what's exciting for the NBA is that for the first time since 1954, the first team All-NBA squad is made up of guys who are all under the age of 27. That's good for this NBA, man. Going forward, these young guys are taking over.
You can't argue with any of those players.
So the second team is just a stat.
Jokic, Giannis, Doncic, Tatum,
Booker. That's your starting.
I mean,
maybe Booker
might be, maybe. But this is a team that had the best record in the NBA.
Kevin Durant's the best player in the world. He's not on the first team All-NBA team this year.
What team's he on? Second?
I think he's second. Third team. I mean, the centers are. I mean, Joel Embiid is the second team All NBA center.
Yeah.
And the third team All NBA center is Karl Anthony Towns. Does Rudy Gobert jam into that mix of Jokic, Embiid, and Karl Anthony Towns right now at all?
He does when the Jazz have the best record in the NBA.
I mean, that's when he's been on the third team.
Right. That's what the Jazz. All-NBA team. The Jazz really kind of messed it up this year. They really had a chance to kind of validate themselves, and they really
trying to, like, rip on these guys. What I'm saying is look at the freaking stacked talent in this league and what they're up against. And so it's no wonder right now that they don't feel like a championship team.
Yeah.
All right, joining us on the program right now. Sorry about the lamentation that I've gone on with here, but
lamentations.
That's what I've kind of gone with. So, joining us on the program, she's our Ute insider for KSLSports.com. She's Michelle Bodkin. Thanks for being with us on the show, Michelle. What's up?
Oh, just I've been outside pretty much all day, just enjoying the great weather.
Why would you do a thing like that?
Amazing.
Well, you know, because it's supposed to be like winter again over Memorial Day.
Is it really?
Weekend, so, yeah, it's not going to be nice. No.
Cancel the golf. Cancel the golf. Well, we were just talking about that. We made the long walk from Broadcast House over here to Vivint, and we were just like, holy cow, just stay right here for the rest of our lives. So we're looking forward to an off season of talking about the Utes, the love and hate that comes in when you're this good of a team and you've got a lot of returning production. I mean, these preseason polls that just go back and forth and all those things, how much do you think that actually – how close are these polls that will put the Utes at a 4 or a 6 or a 9 or a 12? Where are they really when it stacks up to these other teams? Or is it just something we're never really going to know until those first college football rankings come out?
That's always such a fascinating argument, right? Because, like, I mean, we've sat in, you know, other teams in the past that have been preseason ranked, you know, whatever, and then they come in and they end up not being that good. And you go, why were you ranked that high?
Michigan, Texas, it's all the blue blood programs that have no business being there, but they just put them in there because their name is good.
Exactly. And I mean, with Utah, the question mark is, you know, they've never really been in that position before. Like, yes, to end the season, but nobody has ever gone into a season with true confidence as to what exactly Utah brings and just how good they possibly can stack up and measure to. And part of it's because they aren't a name brand, at least not yet. I think they're working on it. And they've made some great strides towards that. But it becomes a question of what do you do with this team? Because yes, on paper, they should be really, really good. They were really good last year, and they're returning a good chunk of what made them so good the year before. So it only makes sense that they're probably really good again. My guess is they'll probably end up being ranked probably close to where they finished the season, at number 9, number 12, number 9, somewhere in there. I don't know. I think they have to prove themselves before they kind of slide into that 6-5-4 spot. But I'm comfortable kind of anywhere, I think, between 9 and 12, which is where they ended last year. Seems reasonable to me, and it's a good building spot for a group like that. And knowing Kyle Whittingham, knowing Utah, they're probably going to take that as a slight, and it might be that little extra motivation, because I know in the building they feel like they are a top four team.
Yeah, this is, I think if USC hires anyone other than Lincoln Riley, because I think Lincoln Riley has at USC has impacted kind of where people feel about Utah. I think if Lincoln Riley doesn't get hired, they hire someone else. I think Utah is across the country maybe that top team, because Lincoln Riley's brought some big time names, wide receivers from Pitt and Caleb Williams and Travis Dye he's brought some big time names into the program, and so I think that kind of you know, tempers a little bit about where Utah is, because Utah is a pretty complete team. You keep hearing about USC getting additions in the transfer portal. We were talking to Stanford's play-by-play guy, Scott Reese, and he's like, Stanford gets nobody. Like, everyone leaves Stanford, and they don't get anyone. Are you hearing anything? Are there any other additions? Are there any other subtractions from Utah at this point, you know, getting into the summer and heading into fall camp?
I still haven't heard anything specifically. I would have to imagine they probably have some guys on their radar that they would like to bring in for official visits starting in next month in June. I know a lot of them are high school kids. I would assume here and there's probably like a JUCO or a transfer portal guy. My guess is because of how competitive the market is with NIL and some of that kind of stuff, if there is somebody on their radar, they're probably keeping it as under wraps as they can, doing those like ninja games. If you follow the Ute Zone board, they talk about ninja games all the time, where a guy kind of comes out of nowhere that Utah's been on for a while, and everybody wonders, you know, how nobody heard about it. I suspect there might be some of that going on. Again, have not heard anything specifically. I think we will start hearing a little bit more on that front in June, in July, as they do prepare to kind of get more focused towards turning their attention to fall camp and, of course, the season. As far as transfers out, I think they're probably done. There might be one or two more after fall camp that, you know, decide to part ways, but I think the biggest majority of the people that were going to leave have already left.
One of the guys that comes in and it has all this pub around him, and I've gone back and watched some of the film when he was at Florida, and I think a lot of Utah fans are excited about Mohamed Diabate. And I've actually, in our 1660, I've got him in my top five just because I think that he, athlete-wise, is as good as anybody on that Ute defense. And am I totally insane for thinking, and not knowing much from him from spring because he's still kind of recovering from an injury, what type of player can he enter to be for the University of Utah? Like, what's his ceiling for him in that Morgan Scalley defense?
To be honest with you, a conversation I've had, I was told that Mumad ended up coming to Utah because he saw the attention that Devin Lloyd was coming, and he felt like he was every bit as good as Devin Lloyd, if not better. And so that's kind of where, at least what I've heard, his ceiling is. And in his eyes, he thinks he's that kind of guy. He thinks he's a first round guy. He thinks he can grab that kind of attention and publicity, and he felt like Utah was the place he could actually do that, which is a little crazy to hear when you think about he was at Florida and the SEC and that kind of, you know, prestige and all that national attention that's always kind of centered in that area. So the fact that he's very confident, A, in his skills, and B, that Utah can get him there, is pretty crazy. And then, of course, yes, you go back and you look at the film, you listen back to interviews that have been done with the coaching staff, Colton Swan and Morgan Scalley, and, you know, all these guys that are talking about, you know, what we love about him is that he's super athletic, very fast, can go from one end of the field to the other really quickly, close the gap, just that freak of nature kind of athlete, and they think he is very smart, and this is all going to be determined upon, I think, you know, how well does he study, because he has been out for a while, hasn't been able to actually get the reps in, so is he taking the mental reps so that he's prepared to do what he says he wants to do and what he thinks he can do and what the Utah coaches think he can do. And if he's dialed in mentally, I don't see any reason why he can't be that guy for Utah this year.
You know, it's just how those things happen at schools. You know, Utah has known to develop running backs now. Utah's been known to develop defensive linemen. You know, and you get a Devin Lloyd who now goes in the first, and it starts attracting other players, and then it just kind of builds and feeds on itself. And that could be very much that process. And, you know, Florida's in a building mode, and, you know, I'm sure Muhammad wanted to go to a team with a chance to win and a team that could highlight what he is as a player. I think it was pretty savvy on his part. What does dropping the divisions mean? What do you think that means for the Pac-12 this year and going forward?
Yeah, it's going to be something that's very interesting to watch develop. I think there's probably going to be several phases of, you know, figuring out what this looks like. I think we've talked before about, you know, one of the big issues is everybody wants to play in California, right? Because it's a big recruiting round. You want your brand present in front of all these high school kids that, you know, you're potentially going to want to look at. And so how do you kind of even that out in a system without divisions? You know, and then of course, any kind of rivalries, you know, are we making sure that those stay in place? I mean, we did see with conference realignment almost, gosh, like 12 years ago now that, you know, some rivalries did get kind of put to the side, and you can even argue that Utah BYU was one of those casualties, even though a little bit of a different situation with it being two totally different conferences. But it's, you know, how are they going to manage all of these moving parts if you're moving to more of a round robin system versus a divisional system? And then of course, it's who's going to rise to the top as well. And is it the people that we currently think, you know, are at the top are going to stay at the top? And right now it looks like it's Utah, USC, and Oregon that are probably the best bets to be that 1-2 punch heading to the national championship, the college or conference championship. So it's just one of those things where a lot of moving pieces, a lot to keep track of, and, you know, who knows what this is ultimately going to end up looking like. And a lot of that also is going to be very dependent upon, you know, USC and Oregon are, you know, in interesting spots because they are dealing with totally new coaching staffs. They are having to kind of re-implement and some of that kind of stuff. And it's not that they don't have the bodies, because I certainly think they have the talent, but how quickly does that talent pick up on, you know, what the coaches want them to do? And so there's just all these things kind of happening. I'm pretty sure the conference commissioner has talked about this, is making it easier for your top teams. So, you know, this year Utah actually plays both USC and Oregon. You know, that's not changing. But in years going forward, if Utah continues to be a top contender, if USC continues to be a top contender, and if Oregon continues to be a top contender, do they see each other very much in the regular season, or does that get saved for the finale?
Yeah, and you know, I was reading this article that you put up about the games that the Utes have been to in the New Year's Six era in these bowl games, Fiesta Bowl, Sugar Bowl, now Rose Bowl. Next year, what it looks like is there's still just going to be the two semifinal games of the Fiesta Bowl and the Peach Bowl. There's the Rose Bowl possibility for the conference champions this year. Next year, the Rose Bowl's a national semifinal. If you had your druthers, a Rose Bowl semifinal game is better than a Fiesta Bowl semifinal game. Discuss.
Yeah, I here's the thing is I missed out on the Fiesta Bowl and I missed out on the Sugar Bowl. I was a freshman the Sugar Bowl year, but I did not go to that game. And then I was in junior high, actually, when they went to the Fiesta Bowl and didn't go to that game either. So, like, I don't have a huge point of reference. The only New Year's Six bowl game I've ever been to is the Rose Bowl.
That's a good one to go to.
I mean, right? Good first one to go to, for sure. And especially under the circumstances and just kind of what happened to get there. It was incredible, and it absolutely lived up, I thought, to the hype and everything that people have been telling me for years and years and years about this game and how mystical it is and the magic and the pageantry, and it absolutely lived up to that. So with that being said, because that's all I know, I for sure am going Rose Bowl on a semifinal, absolutely.
Right. Problem is you'd have to wait till 2023 or 2024 for that.
Hold on.
So I guess you'll take the national semifinal.
Hang on.
In a Fiesta Bowl next year.
I would go to the Peach Bowl if you're in the playoffs over the Rose Bowl, okay? This year.
Why?
Well, because Utah's already been to the Rose Bowl.
Old hat? Yeah. Good argument.
We'll go to the Peach Bowl.
Good argument. Old hat. That's not what you want. You don't want to go to Georgia to play in a national semifinal. You're probably playing Georgia in a national semifinal in their backyard. That's not what you want. So, either way. Michelle Bodkin, you can read her byline there at KSLSports.com. We appreciate all the Utah-centric stuff that she's pumping out. We love having her on the team. Thanks for being with us, Michelle.
Hey, thanks, guys. Have a great rest of your show.
Yeah, you too. You have a great rest of our show, too. How you doing?
I'll tell you, not having like divisions anymore, like the best thing that can happen is Utah and USC are the two best teams in the Pac-12.
That's the best thing that could happen?
Yes. Yeah, because let's just say it's Utah.
Have them play each other again.
Let's say it's Utah and Washington State. National media doesn't care.
For sure.
But if they're
playing each other a second time, it's Lincoln Riley and it's Kyle Whittingham.
Yes.
It's Cam Rising, Caleb Williams. There's no way that game doesn't deliver on October 15th between those two guys, right?
The first time, and you want both of these teams playing very well, and then you want them to come back and play each other in a conference championship game. Yeah.
Oregon, I'm still.
Then you start getting on the roadmap.
I'm not sold on Oregon as the team that's going to kind of split Utah and USC. I'm not convinced. Now Utah's got to play Oregon and USC, so. They got the tougher road to go. All right. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We have our What Are the Odds around the corner. Don't want to miss it, so let's just jump right into the break. We'll come right back. More to go. 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison. Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.